From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Mary Louise Kelly in Washington.
And I'm Elsa Chang in Los Angeles. In a high-security prison in Terre Haute, Indiana, two federal inmates await their executions, one tomorrow, the next on Thursday. As they wait, their lawyers are asking the court to intervene because they say the drugs used to kill the inmates will cause their lungs to fill with fluid as they die, and that in their final moments, they could experience the sensation of drowning.
Those fears aren't unfounded. And just a quick warning for listeners, what you're about to hear may be upsetting. In the spring of 2017, an Arkansas inmate gasped and choked as he was executed.
The following year, in Ohio, an inmate heaved against his restraints, struggling for air.
And a few months after that, in Tennessee, once again, an inmate gasping for air and convulsing. All of these inmates were later found to have lungs filled with fluid.
Now, we can't ask them how painful their executions were, whether they amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. But what we can do is peer inside their bodies. For the past 2 years, a team at All Things Considered has been investigating the autopsies of inmates killed by lethal injection. We've obtained the largest collection of these autopsies ever assembled in the U.S. This collection spans decades of executions across multiple states. And what our findings reveal is evidence of a death far less peaceful than what states promised when they adopted lethal injection decades ago. We began this story in Atlanta, where I went in 2018 with producer Noah Caldwell to meet a doctor who made a startling discovery.
Hi, Joel.
Hi, hi. Nice to meet you.
Joel Zivit works 80-hour weeks at Emory University Hospital. He's an anesthesiologist checking in on patients in the ICU.
So his temperature, he's just like on a low grade. And did he get the CPAP? Did he get a dose?
A few years ago, federal defenders in Georgia hired Zivit to review a few autopsies of inmates executed by lethal injection.
What I was asked to address was the blood levels of certain kinds of medications.
But something else caught his eye.
I recognized that something was amiss.
What did you see in the autopsy?
So I began to see a pattern of organ failure. Instead of what I thought would be pristine findings, instantaneous death, I began to see a picture that was more consistent with a slower death, a death associated with suffering.
A painful death. In autopsy after autopsy, what Zivit saw were unusually heavy lungs, lungs swollen with fluid, which surprised him. It's not a common finding in autopsies. It's something you'd see in cases of, say, congestive heart failure or sepsis, neither of which were happening here. He wanted a second opinion, so he contacted a colleague at Emory, a pathologist named Mark Edgar.
I said, I want you to look at these documents and just tell me what you think you see here, because I think I'm seeing something here that is a surprise to me.
Now, Zivit deliberately did not tell Edgar what had surprised him in those autopsies, but Edgar, he zeroed in on the exact same thing that Zivit did, lungs filled with fluid. He noticed
frothy fluid in the nose.
The same word kept popping up.
Frothy material in the main bronchi.
The word frothy.
Frothy fluid in the upper and lower airways.
What they were seeing was a severe form of a condition called pulmonary edema. The presence of froth was a troubling clue because it meant that inmates were still alive and trying to breathe as their lungs were filling with fluid. Zivit and Edgar got a few dozen more autopsies from other states just to see, was this a fluke? And similar words like frothy and fluid kept coming up to describe the lungs.
It was a stunning finding because here was some physical document that could answer a question that could otherwise not be answered, which was, what exactly is the experience of a dying inmate?
Zivit brought these findings to federal court in multiple states. It's evidence that is now at the forefront of legal challenges to lethal injection. For the past 2 years, a team at NPR has undertaken its own investigation. We expanded the scope of the data significantly. We obtained more than 300 inmate autopsies through Freedom of Information Act requests. They cover executions in 9 states dating from 1990 to 2019. And what these autopsies show is that when inmates' lungs were examined after their executions, pulmonary edema occurred 84% of the time. That was consistent across states. Medical experts say these findings are troubling. because they mean it is very likely these inmates experienced the sensation of drowning or suffocation before they died, and that many inmates were not being properly anesthetized. We're going to talk about all of this with producer Noah Caldwell. He's been poring over these autopsies for the last year and a half, and he's with me now. Hey, Noah.
Hi, Elsa.
All right, you have been investigating the science behind these findings of pulmonary edema, or fluid in the lungs.
Right, and what it all means for the experience of the inmate.
Okay, so fill us in on what you found.
Okay, so I have an autopsy in front of me here, just to use as an example. It's of a man named Robert Van Hook, and he was executed in July 2018 in Ohio. And witnesses say that during the execution, his chest started heaving, and then he gasped for air loud enough that they heard it in the next room. And during the autopsy, they found bloody froth in his airways.
So his lungs were filling up with fluid.
Right. So let's walk through how this happens. Most lethal injections use three drugs, one after another. And we're going to focus on the first drug. This is the drug that's supposed to anesthetize the inmate. And in Robert Van Hook's case, it was a common drug used in dozens of executions in recent years called midazolam.
Midazolam.
And that drug is used safely in hospitals every day. It's often used to calm people down before surgeries. But the way this drug is injected during an execution explains why inmates develop pulmonary edema so often. And I found the perfect person to explain this.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The lung is special.
This is Philippe Camus. He's a doctor in Dijon, France, and he's spent his entire career looking at the way different drugs damage the lungs. And he says normally, in a hospital, drugs like this are given at low doses and very slowly, because
doctors and nurses, they know there are accidents linked to too quick an injection.
But when it comes to lethal injection, the dose is given quickly and it's massive. For example, Robert Van Hook was given 500 milligrams of midazolam. Compare that to the 1 or 2 milligrams you'd get in a hospital. And when that happens, you get a huge concentrated ball of drugs coursing through your bloodstream. It's called a front.
Look at the weather. It's sunny, and then what meteorologists call a front, and the rain comes.
And that front goes to the heart, and then straight to the lungs.
Okay, so what happens then?
Well, the physiology here is complex, but to simplify, the architecture of the lungs is extremely delicate, and it gets damaged by that massive front of drugs. So fluids flood into spaces that are normally dry, and these are spaces that need to be dry in order for you to breathe. So if you were conscious at the time,
it would be a feeling of drowning, suffocation, panic, imminent doom.
This is Jeffrey Sipple. He's a pulmonologist at the University of Colorado. He confirmed what the doctors in Atlanta told us. We would not be seeing pulmonary edema if inmates were simply nodding off to sleep.
Is pulmonary edema expected with the process of dying? And it's not. This is not how anyone would imagine that lethal injection would unfold.
And two final points here. First, it's not just midazolam. The other drugs states use are also causing pulmonary edema. And second, since these drugs are given at the start, the lungs are filling with fluid near the beginning of the execution, and that will continue until the inmate dies. Sometimes that's 3 minutes. In Robert Van Hook's case, it was 15 minutes. One execution a few years ago lasted nearly 2 hours.
Wow. Okay, so if that is why pulmonary edema is occurring in many executions, the next question we wanted to ask was, how much can inmates feel the suffocating effects of their lungs filling up with fluid? Noah's going to stay with me for this one.
Yeah, this is a big question that courtrooms around the country are debating right now. And states argue that inmates are fully anesthetized.
But doctors are testifying that that first drug isn't reliable, especially when we're talking about midazolam. David Lubarsky is one of the leading anesthesiologists in the country, and he runs UC Davis Health.
The ability of the drug midazolam to produce an anesthetic state is reliably zero.
We should note that he has testified in death penalty cases on behalf of inmates. He says midazolam can make you sleep, but it does not block pain, meaning inmates can still be jolted awake by the pain of pulmonary edema. Hence the many inmates that gasp for air in the execution chamber.
It is not a general anesthetic, and its use as a sole anesthetic agent in the lethal injection protocol would amount to malpractice if it were a medical application.
Now, some states do use a general anesthetic called pentobarbital, but there are problems with that drug too. In a 2005 study, Lubarsky and some other doctors looked at the autopsies of inmates executed with this kind of drug. Nearly all of them showed blood levels of the drug that were lower than what's required for surgery, because that drug is short-acting, and even a large dose wears off quickly. And in the autopsies we obtained, we are seeing similarly low levels.
We know for a fact that many inmates were sensate during their execution, based on the level of drugs that are in their body.
Sensate, meaning they could feel everything. Now, there are some doctors who do push back on Lubarsky's 2005 study. They say the amount of a drug in your blood can change drastically after death, so the levels can't be trusted.
Okay, so to recap, inmates are supposed to get a drug that keeps them from feeling pain, but one drug that some states use is not an anesthetic at all, and the effectiveness of another drug is debated.
Which brings us back to the question we asked at the beginning. Has lethal injection lived up to its promise as a more peaceful, more humane method of execution than what came before it?
It doesn't actually do what the state claims.
This is Joel Zivit again, the doctor in Atlanta who had first found evidence of pulmonary edema in inmate autopsies. And to him, lethal injection mimics the practice of medicine. But he says it's all just theater.
This is a powerful imitation, because it uses the terminology, it uses the chemicals, and so people believe that the safety that medicine provides is now being transferred into the execution chamber. It is not.
Coming up, in the next part of our investigation, we'll see how all of this is playing out in the courts, courts that are struggling to figure out the difference between just punishment and cruel and unusual punishment. We'll meet people on either side of this divide, including a man who has waited 36 years to see the execution of his wife's murderer.
It is only the bleeding hearts and the half-wits that are involved in this discussion. Cruel and unusual punishment is laying out there in the cemetery.
Over the past 3 years, courts in multiple states have seen autopsy evidence of inmates' lungs filling with fluid as they're being executed in Tennessee, Arkansas, Alabama, and Ohio, where we pick up the second part of our investigation. We begin this part of the story not in a courtroom, but in the small town of New Concord, where I went with producer Noah Caldwell to meet a man caught in the middle of that legal fight. And just a warning here, this story contains details of a violent crime that some listeners might find upsetting. Norman Stout has been waiting 36 years to watch the man who killed his wife die. He's 90 now and lives in New Concord, Ohio, just a few miles from the house he and his wife Mary Jane used to share.
Hi, people, welcome. Come in.
Hi.
Norman's home today is a living memorial to Mary Jane. It's an old Freemason lodge that's been converted into a museum of sorts, jam-packed with shelves and shelves of the Holly Hobby figurines she once treasured.
There's over 1,200 different items here.
He and Mary Jane first met when he was just 21 and still in the Air Force.
I probably had the only brand new automobile on the base.
So that made you quite the eligible bachelor.
Might have been. She must have found something. I couldn't figure out why, but I'm extremely proud that she did.
What was it about her that made you fall in love?
She was a beautiful person, mentally, physically. I had been a draftsman. I understood good lines and design.
Norman and Mary Jane raised 3 sons together, who all happened to be out of the house on the night of May 14th, 1984. That's when 2 young men appeared on the Stout's doorstep.
One had a mustache, and the other one, there was nothing distinguished about him.
The men asked to use the telephone. They said they were having trouble with their car. After Norman let them in, they suddenly drew guns and announced it was a robbery.
After the chill ran down my spine, I knew I was in trouble, because I had no way of protecting my wife.
The Stouts were ordered into the back bedroom. Then Norman lunged at one of the men.
He shot me from across the bed, right there.
On the top of your head.
That bullet is still in there. Full, complete bullet.
They shot him in the head again. Mary Jane started screaming, and then Norman heard the men turn their guns on her.
I heard 4 shots. because I couldn't shut my ears. I could shut my eyes, but not my ears.
His wife was dead. Norman would spend 3 weeks in a coma, only to wake up to learn he would never again be able to control the left side of his body. Months after that horrific night, a man named John Stumpf was sentenced to death for the murder of Mary Jane Stout. And for the next 3.5 decades, Norman Stout has watched Stumpf's execution date get pushed back over and over again.
What is the system that takes 35 years? I don't know. You have to admire it that it can get away with 35 years of doing nothing.
Norman has marveled at how the courtroom debate over cruel and unusual punishment has stalled justice for him. Because this case involving John Stumpf is now at the forefront of a new legal battle unfolding over lethal injection. Courts are taking a closer look at something that, all things considered, has also spent the last 2 years investigating. Evidence that inmates' lungs are filling with fluid while they are still alive in the execution chamber. This is where producer Noah Caldwell picks up the story.
I'm in the federal courthouse in Dayton, Ohio, and a team of lawyers representing John Stumpf is rolling boxes of documents through security. Buried inside those boxes are autopsies.
The autopsy records are genuine, legitimate, unassailable scientific evidence that shows what is actually happening to these inmates as they're being executed.
That's lawyer Alan Bonner, and he says what's actually happening is akin to torture.
These inmates are fighting and struggling, gasping to breathe as if they are drowning and suffocating, being waterboarded.
Being waterboarded. That's what Bonner says is facing his clients, all of whom are inmates on death row in Ohio, including John Stumpf. Now, lawyers for the state declined to speak with me, but they argue in court that the way Ohio executes inmates is entirely constitutional, and that the drugs they use block any pain the inmate might feel. It's up to Bonner and his team to convince the judge otherwise. They argue that during lethal injections, inmates' lungs are filling with fluid and that the drugs don't block any of that pain, which they say is a clear violation of the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment.
We can't ask the clients what is happening to them during the course of their executions, obviously.
So these autopsies have become a way for the dead to speak as witnesses for death row inmates still awaiting execution.
That evidence continues to build and continues to get better every time another execution happens, unfortunately.
It's evidence we've seen in our investigation, too. We reviewed hundreds of autopsies from around the country and found inmates' lungs filling with fluid in 84% of the cases. It's a condition called pulmonary edema, which you wouldn't expect to see in most autopsies. In early 2019, the district court here in Dayton took Bonner's side. For the first time, a federal judge ruled that the pain of pulmonary edema constituted cruel and unusual punishment, and he likened it to, quote, waterboarding. And citing that decision, the governor of Ohio then delayed all upcoming executions, including John Stumpf's.
These delays are what Norman Stout finds maddening. To him, these courts have agonized far more about what his wife's murderer will endure than what Mary Jane suffered 36 years ago.
I just consider that stupidity. Cruel and unusual punishment is laying out there in the cemetery.
But I wanted to ask Stout about the findings of our investigation and the evidence presented in court in Dayton. Would he care if he knew the lungs of inmates were filling with fluid during lethal injections, enough to make those inmates feel as if they were drowning?
How long is that going to last? I don't care for a few moments or a few minutes. He's going to be dead anyhow. He's not going to complain. It is only the bleeding hearts and the half-wits that are involved in this discussion.
As Stout has watched judges struggle with that discussion about cruel and unusual punishment, he wonders why they don't see the simple solution, the one he believes would cut through the endless debate. Forget lethal injection, he says. Just shoot them.
That sniper can be anyone that belongs to a rifle club or has qualified as an expert in the military, which includes me. And boy, I work cheap.
If this whole debate is about a more humane death, Stout says why wouldn't a precisely aimed bullet get the job done?
There is absolutely no suffering whatsoever. He doesn't know what hit him. He is dead.
And as it turns out, on this issue, Stout has an unexpected ally. Here's producer Noah Caldwell again.
Yeah, I heard almost the exact same thing at the courthouse in Dayton.
He would be dead before his brain would be able to process the pain of being hit with a bullet.
That's Alan Bonner again. Remember, the lawyer for the man convicted of murdering Norman Stout's wife. Now, he doesn't actually want anyone to be shot, but if he's going to argue that lethal injection is cruel and unusual, he's required by the courts to identify an alternative method that would be less painful. And so for him, that alternative method is the firing squad.
Why firing squad? It's uncontested that it would be literally painless or very nearly so.
The last time an inmate was executed by firing squad was 2010. But last year in Tennessee, two inmates did choose to be executed by electric chair because they were so concerned about the pain of lethal injection.
So what kind of pain is acceptable during an execution? Well, legally speaking, that is a question without an easy answer.
Judges may vary on how one views pain, period.
That's Deborah Denno, a law professor at Fordham University and one of the leading experts on death penalty law. She says there's never been a coherent constitutional standard for assessing pain, one that spells out, like, how long can the pain last or when does the method violate our sense of decency?
Somebody might think that suffocation certainly constitutes pain, and another judge may think it's not, that suffocation alone doesn't qualify as severe pain and needless suffering.
Severe pain and needless suffering. That's one standard the Supreme Court has set out for whether an execution method is cruel and unusual under the Eighth Amendment. And the case in Ohio shows just how subjective these evaluations of pain can be from court to court. After the judge in Dayton ruled that the pain of pulmonary edema was cruel and unusual punishment, the appeals court in Cincinnati saw the same evidence and overturned the decision.
So currently, no court is standing in the way of John Stumpf's execution, which is scheduled for next year, a day Norman Stout is determined to witness if he lives long enough.
I'm trying my best, even though I've had a heart attack. We never know when we're going.
Meanwhile, the legal battle over pulmonary edema continues in Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Arkansas. And in recent months, the U.S. Supreme Court has allowed federal executions to resume. The High Court has been presented with evidence of pulmonary edema in lethal injection cases, but it's never issued a ruling on whether it constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. So nationwide, it is still constitutional to execute inmates even if their lungs fill with fluid as they die.
And public opinion is still behind lethal injection. Polling shows that the majority of Americans support the death penalty, and an overwhelming number believe lethal injection is the most humane method of execution. I'm Noah Caldwell.
And I'm Elsa Chang. You can read our entire investigation at npr.org.